Subcommittee on Education, and we will commence as a subcommittee, and I would like to invite Fred Miller up. Fred, welcome to the committee. We appreciate all the work you've done over the years, and we like you a lot now that you're out of town.
It's easier and you're not down here all the time. Thank you.
I'm sure you feel that way too.
I'm Fred Miller, Senior Vice President for Portland General Electric, and I happen also to be co-chair of the Coalition for School Funding Now. And I'm really here in that capacity, although PG spends lots of time on education, so I might be here anyway. Let me return your kindness for letting me have about 5 minutes by being brief and to the point. The coalition, I think you'll recall, because you've seen them during past sessions, is really a combination of a number of business people, parents, community leaders that have an interest in education funding. And we established this about two biennia ago, and you've seen evidence of that organization the last couple of sessions. And business is involved with this primarily because I think the organizations I belong to have K-12 education as a top priority. And whether that's the Portland Chamber, Oregon Business Council, or Oregon Business Association, is always near the top. So we have made an effort to fund the organization and participate in the discussions. This session seems to be different because the governor's budget staked out a $5.2 billion number, which in our discussions we thought was, given all the constraints you have and the difficult decisions you have, was a fair place to be, and we were delighted when the co-chairs arrived at the same number. So this has been a different session where I think in the past you've seen a number of parents and interested people on the Capitol steps and in your offices saying we've got to get a higher number. I think with good judgment we said we appreciate that you've treated K-12 well, and still people from around the state who are involved in this organization think, don't we need to be there? We have to continue to show an interest. And when I speak to people that are in the legislative leadership, I frequently start with the first sentence, are we still at 5.2? And generally I think it feels pretty good, and you of course know that better than I at the moment. But I think our agenda now has become more one of, we've got a hold of 5.2, and so far we've been getting the right responses. But we didn't want to ignore the opportunity to express that, because there are a lot of people with a great deal of interest and wanted to make some showing. So for this session, that's a high priority item, to stay at 5.2. In the little longer run, I think you'll continue to hear from the organization, and again with business support, to try to do something that accomplishes the quality education model level. And then we realized that this session you couldn't take that big bite and get there. But I think, as you all appreciate, the debate seems to be 2 years at a time and relates to current service level, which doesn't really answer the question of what kind of quality education are we providing. So in the interim, we'd really like to step back and focus on that model and say what's necessary for K-12 and get in that discussion. For right now, I think you're doing a good job with it. I'd say parenthetically, when in a previous job, when I was giving the governor some unsolicited advice on inaugural address, I looked back at five or six previous governors, and they all had said to be successful in K-12 was on their top of the list, and they wanted to get up so the state was providing 50% of the funding. Well, you've done that, but somehow we're not declaring victory. Obviously, it was done in a way that wasn't envisioned by the previous governors. So, but we do appreciate you getting to 5.2 and hopefully staying there. And in the future, I think you'll hear us talking about the longer-term financing.
Thank you very much, Fred, and thank you for all the work that you've done. And we will want to hear from you again after we get our May 14th. Let me just share a minute with you about my frustration. In my Senate district, I have three school districts, Portland, Beaverton, and Hillsborough. And so what I talk about now is 2010 and 5, because on the 5.2, why Portland has to cut 20 million, Beaverton 10 million, and Hillsborough 5 million. And so now people are beginning to come to us, and the main, you know, advocates of last session, and we worked so hard to get to 4.8 or whatever it was, and say 5.2 is not enough. And so some way we have to take a very close look at, you know, the quality, how we hurt the quality of education if we get to 5.2 only. And so that's what we're primarily dealing with, and we'll want your input after we see what the May forecast is.
Okay, if I might make two more comments.
Certainly.
I did leave a handout that lists a number of the cuts that are made even at the 5.2 okay. level for all of you. And I guess the second cut with the wife on the Portland School Board, I yeah. know quite a bit about the difficulty to get $20 million. So we appreciate you staying there, because were you not at 5.2, it certainly would be way worse than what the cuts you see.
Any other questions or comments for Fred? Thank you very
Thank
much,
you very
sir.
Much.
Good to see you. Okay, now we will proceed with Gene Thorne, Local Option Equalization Grants Policy Option Package. Can you tell me what that is?
I sure will.
Excuse me, we have some students with us today, and where are you from?
Highland Park Middle School.
Which part?
Highland Park.
Oh, Highland Park.
Your district.
In the Beaverton District. Good, welcome. Nice to have you here. Hope you enjoy your visit and learn something.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Gene Thorne from the governor's office, they were sharing that they watched the House floor debate on the Oregon and University, congratulating the University of Oregon, Oregon State football team, and there was, banter back and forth, and they were wondering if
that was the Senate.
Oh, the Senate. Whether that's the way it always was. So.
Yeah, it got a little out of hand.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, that's not typical of a day in the Senate. So, you know, I don't apologize, but we probably have maybe two of those days or two of those kind of bills each session of 6 months. So
they said they were actually waiting to hear the bill on cockfighting in the House. And
okay.
Missed that. So,
yeah.
Mr. Chair, thank you for having me back. We realized with all of the various people the last few days, we did not cover the local option equalization grants, and we needed to do that. I think you have a couple of pieces today, and then there was another piece that I think you probably had received earlier. The bill currently is in the Revenue Committee, but if I could just explain kind of the intent behind it, and we have a revised fiscal impact because of some amendments. We talked yesterday about Measure 1 requirements, and the Measure 1 requirements we discussed were those around sufficiency of funding and tying funding to the quality goals and reporting out the sufficiency of the budget and the impact of the budget against those goals. There was another part, though, of Measure 1, which related to local option grants. As you may remember, last session, the local option bill was one of the final bills passed, and it really was one that the governor seriously considered vetoing, and there were a lot of people on both sides of the issue. It wasn't a partisan issue, it was on both sides and both sides of the aisle who came to talk with him one way or the other. And I think one of the concerns he had was that a local option may not really be an option for many locations because of the level of property wealth that they have in those districts, that it just would require such a high level of support, it's not attainable. And there actually had been a minority report last session on the local option bill that did not pass. As he considered whether to sign or veto that bill, he felt that it was important to move ahead and allow those districts that did wish to go for a local option to do that, but to also look to see if we could make some longer term changes, really to make it more of an option for lower property wealth districts. So a second part of Measure 1 really related to that and required that the legislature to establish a system of grants to eligible districts, and these are districts that have passed a local option. And as you'll see, the amount of such grants and eligibility criteria shall be determined by the Legislative Assembly. So House Bill 2300 is the governor's proposal for doing that. If you would take a look at this chart here, entitled Estimated Maximum Local Option Tax Equalization Grants by School District, I'd just like to explain the concepts behind this. The assessed value, if you look over, this is 99-2000, tax year. If you look three columns over, assessed value per ADMW, Neocony School District has an assessed value per ADMW of $928,000. On the other end, you'll see, I don't know where 00 is, so but Ukiah, or you know, which has an assessed value of $75,000, NISA with an assessed value of $83,000 per ADMW. what House Bill 2300 would do would be, as you array school districts in order by the level of their assessed value per ADMW, and you go, if you go to the second page here, you'll see once you hit the 75th percentile, so once you've gone through the top basically 50 school districts, since we have 198, and get to Corbett, it would establish that as being a target, the 283,550. So if there are school districts below this level and they pass a local option, they would then be eligible for a state grant that would take them up to this level. Eventually, the local option as it's structured, districts can pass the lower of either the gap, Measure 5 gap, so the difference between Measure 4750 and the $5 per thousand under Measure 5, or 10% of the ADMW grant, or $500 per student. So eventually, most districts now are in the gap. Eventually, over time, what becomes kind of the piece that rules would be the $500 per student. You can see also, when you look at the $500 per student, for Neocony to raise that requires only 53 cents per $1,000 of property. NISA, on the other hand, to raise that same amount per student, it requires almost $6 per $1,000. And so clearly it's a local option for many of the poor districts really isn't an option.
Right.
Most of those... Thank you, Representative Smith.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
Do you want to say something?
No, sir.
Okay.
If you look at... There was another handout, I think, that was probably given to you yesterday, and you'll see those that have actually passed a local option so far. And most of them are the, I guess I would say, the wealthier school districts in terms of property wealth. But there are others that fall below that. Crow, Applegate, Lorain, Helix, Colton, Pendleton, and Camas Valley have all passed local options. There are also a number of school districts that during the interim attempted a local option, were not able to pass a local option, and many of those would be in kind of the bottom half of this. So for those school districts, we think the idea of, and I haven't talked to those districts since they had their local option elections, but when we had talked after the end of last session, those from poor property wealth districts said, you know, for us, if we were able to say there would be some state money that would come along with this, that could really make a difference in getting a local option passed. The bill, as it's, well, under the amendments that we currently have structured, would provide a little more certainty than to the budget than when we put together the governor's budget. One of the problems that we encountered is that trying to determine what school districts might go for a local option in the interim that would be effective in the interim and that would qualify. And so we had assumed looking at those that didn't, that tried to go out and did not receive one, that some of those would qualify. The bill, as we're looking at it now, would basically say if you have an election in the interim, and that is actually effective in the interim, although you would qualify for that grant, you wouldn't get the money till the subsequent biennium. And so that way it brings more certainty to the budgeting process. So those that we know already have their local options in place, we can budget for them now. If they pass one in the interim, then you would not be obligated to fund that until the next biennium, even though it would be a retroactive. So that brings it down to probably, and we're still, I think there are some districts that may be going out in May, and I don't have that information yet, but at this point, for those that have passed and would qualify under the criteria that we're currently looking at, the cost would be about $700,000 for the next biennium. You'll see on this other chart, it's $372,000, and that's for 1 year. So we believe it's an important piece of really trying to bring some equal opportunity to school districts around local options, because for many, as Representative Smith noted, it really is not within reach at this point, and so this would be a way to provide some additional support to them.
Thank you. Where is House Bill 2300 now?
It's in the House Revenue Committee.
House Revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Senator Trobe.
The May election would be the last time when school districts could qualify for some of this money if they passed a levy and at the May election.
Okay.
We would know that before the session's over,
yes.
Probably. So
that's correct, Senator.
Fund the right amount of money.
And if they did have an election during the interim, again, they could qualify, but they wouldn't get their money until next biennium.
So it would be budgeted in the next budget.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
To the students, this is quite confusing, I'm sure. We're talking about funding schools, and the state funds the schools to a greater extent, now over 70% out of the state income tax, which is personal and business. In another day, or before 1990, why the local property taxes used to be the primary source of funding for operations of schools. And so it's our Beaverton School District has done very well, managed to do very well, and we have passed the local options you just heard Gene Thorne talk about. But because of the rapid growth in the Beaverton District, why we have a lot of needs, and like building more schools, and I know you know we're building a lot of schools right now. So growth has caused this problem, but I can show you small rural school districts that are losing student population, that and the money follows the students. So as a school district loses students, they lose money for operation, and so that is what we're trying to deal with at this time. And Gene, that $700,000, that would be general fund money. It's not bonds.
Yes, Mr. Chair, it would be general fund money.
Okay, thank mm-hmm. you. Questions for?
Yeah.
Yes, Representative.
Representative Hobson and I were just wondering how you arrived at your assessed value for ADMW. Was that property values, or how does that work?
No. That'd be.
This is where I turn to those who know the technical end. They said they'd
we were just kind
by.
Of curious because of we were noting some of our own schools in our own district here, and I was making assumptions myself, and those assumptions may not be correct.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, for the record, I'm Nancy Heiligman from the Department of Education, and we calculated the assessed value per ADMW by dividing the assessed value for the entire district by the number of weighted students.
So it's real property value then?
Yes, it is the assessed property value.
Thank you.
Okay. Kurt, you've got to have some questions on that.
Absolutely none, sir.
Come on.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. But
yeah, okay. I thought that you... Well, I have a lot of questions about the local option, too, and I really struggled with it last session for the very reason that we're confronted with now. I mean, the small, the less wealthy districts simply aren't going to pass it, so we need some sort of a incentive, and this grant probably would do that. I understood you to say that only those school districts that are in the lower 75 percentile would be eligible, so none of the wealthier school districts would be. So are the wealthiest school districts, based on that 25 out of the about 50 school districts out of the 198 districts we have?
Yes, Mr. Chair, 75th percentile, and we've got almost 200 school districts.
Yes.
So those at the top would not receive an additional grant. Those below that would receive a grant that would take them up to the bottom of that top 25%.
Okay.
Not all the way to the top.
Fine. Any other questions? Not? Thank you very much. Let's see. Gene, do you have something else you're going to tell us today? That's all I have.
Not that I know of.
Do you have anything else you wanted to tell us? Did you get through everything you wanted to do yesterday? Nancy? Okay.
Sure.
Senator Trow.
Maybe Gene can help with this. It seems to me that the amount for this small school option in the budget, the governor's budget, was about $5 million, wasn't it?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senator Trow, in the governor's recommended budget, we had $5 million. And partly what we were trying to deal with there was provide a cushion for districts that would implement one in the interim through the amendments that we're seeking under House Bill 2300 that would allow us, as I noted, even though districts would qualify, they wouldn't receive their money. So it provides certainty to the budgeting. So we know which districts have passed a local option. There might be some in May, but we would know.
Well, when you make recommendations for the budget again, will you simply reduce the amount that you're going to need in this item?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, that's what we've been discussing with DAS, that we won't need the full $5 million, and so that could be applied elsewhere in the budget.
And will you tell us where you apply it, or can we apply it as we...
Good question.
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, I think as far as any revised budget from the governor, it's hard to see where, I mean, you'll be able to see puts and takes. I don't know if you'll be able to see this one specifically goes there, but ultimately it's your budget.
We understand that.
Okay. Gene, is the governor going to revise his budget after the May 14th?
Mr. Chair, I believe so. I'm trying to leave a little wiggle room there, but I believe that's what his intention is.
Do you have any idea how soon after May 14th it'll be available?
I don't.
Okay.
I'm sure someone does, but I don't.
Will you lead me to that someone who does?
Well, I believe Teresa McHugh probably knows when he would plan on releasing them.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chair, that's it for today's agenda. I would just like to clarify for the record that the $5 million option package for this program is not in the co-chair's budget.
No, it's not.
So to the extent that it costs any less than $5 million, you don't really have any savings because they're starting with a base of zero.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that.
Any other business come before this committee? If not, we are.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a surprise.